into snow showers Thursday and Friday. So it looks like we have a chance of snow showers on Thursday and another chance on Friday. We're at about 41 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. Your news time is just about 12:30. Again, 41 degrees. Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. Middle of the week, over the hump day today, and now that we're into the early afternoon, indeed, we are into the second half of the week, and this is the last full week of January. Yeah, the end of next week, it'll be February. Any complaints about that? I don't see too many hands out there. No. Most folks are happy to have January in the rearview mirror to get January out of the way. What a roller coaster ride we've been on with our temperature. We are right now sitting in the low 40s, 43 degrees at last check here in the city of Butler. We may add a couple of more degrees onto that. Get us up into the mid-40s by sometime later this afternoon as the rain continues to fall. And it will continue to fall throughout the day today, a rainy day. But mild. Just remember, folks, yesterday, we were 4 below 0 here in the city of Butler. And it was even colder than that in several of the outlying areas. Everybody was below zero. Now here we are approaching the mid-40s today. Well, enjoy the warm while we have it, because low 30s tomorrow, and then by Friday, high temperatures in the mid-teens. So back and forth we go in the month of January. You know, it's not unusual this time of year to have an extended stretch of below freezing temperatures. And not unusual at all. Last January, bitterly cold. This January, really not so bad, you know, until we had that cold snap that moved in earlier this week. It really hadn't been too bad. Haven't had a great deal of snow this winter yet either. Still plenty of winter left, but so far we've managed, although it does. When that bitterly cold temperature rolls in, that really does hit you, doesn't it? Yeah, yesterday morning. Wow. Open talk to begin the program for a while today. We're going to be chatting in just a few minutes with Ken Starr. An old acquaintance from Star Hill Winery out along Interstate 80, and are one of the wineries that will be coming to Butler this Saturday now, the annual WISR Butler County Wine Festival, just a few days away. Butler Days Inn, Saturday afternoon and Saturday evening. So we'll talk to Ken Starr. It's one of the biggest wineries around, regional wineries, and they have a lot of tasting locations, too, in addition to their main winery, which is in Kerwinsville, PA. A little bit later on the program, we'll be talking with guest Cheryl Hazer about overcoming grief and depression. And still later on the program today, how to improve workplace performance. And we'll be chatting with guest Don Ream. So that's the outline of the program today. Open talk right now, 283-2525. We were talking, I guess it was late last week, we were talking about unwanted phone calls, unsolicited phone calls from telemarketers and robocalls. I had a note from a listener who did not make it onto the program that day, but she said she has, when she suspects that it might be a telemarketer that's calling her, you know, she doesn't recognize the number or there's no name in the caller ID, she said, "This is what I say, Dave. If you are a telemarketer or asking for money, may the Lord be with you." And then she hangs up. That's pretty good. I like that. Gave me a smile. You know, it gets the message across, but, you know, in a gentle way, I guess. Yeah, good idea. By the way, I saw something on the wire. Let me see if I can find that again. It had to do with Verizon. I know a lot of you who just have cell phones now, smartphones, rely on Verizon Wireless. That's one of the most popular internet service providers, cell phone providers. Verizon is going to start offering free spam and robocalling protection to all customers starting in March. Now, this is following on the heels of a similar announcement just a week ago from T-Mobile. T-Mobile. So I'll be anxious to see the details on that. Verizon Wireless set to roll out robocall and spam call protection to all of its customers. Now, there are no details yet. They're going to be rolling it out in March, so it's a little over a month away. I'll be anxious to find out. You know, do you have to sign up for it? It's free, according to the early word. Do you have to sign up for it, or do you have to opt out? You know, you get it unless you opt out. I don't know. I can't imagine anyone who would opt out of robocall protection, right? Or spam call protection. I can't imagine anyone who would opt out of that. And maybe there's some folks who enjoy it. I don't know. For most of us, it's just a bother. I can always detect, well, most of the time anyway, detect a robocall because there's usually a pause. You know, you answer the phone and there's a pause for a couple of seconds, and right away I suspect that it's because, you know, they're calling by computer. It's not a real person on the other end. And I just hang up. Yeah. Maybe I should start using the advice of one of our listeners last week who said, "May the Lord be with you." And then she hangs up. I, after signing up for the no call thing, whatever that's called, do not call, is that it? From the federal government, I signed up for that several years ago, actually, as I think most people did, a lot of people did. I really haven't had as much problem with the unwanted calls, telemarketers and the robocalls as I used to. I still get some occasionally. And then, of course, at election time, you always get them from the political parties and the candidates because our lawmakers, in their infinite wisdom, exempted themselves from the do-not-call legislation. So you'll get calls from them leading up to election time. That's tapered off now, too, since we just had the midterm elections. Hey, we note the passing of Harris Wofford. Died late Monday night. The word came out yesterday of his death. You know who Harris Wofford was? No? He was a former U.S. Senator for Pennsylvania. You know, we have two of them. Every state has two U.S. Senators. Harris Wofford was appointed to the U.S. Senate upon the death of John Hines. And for those of you who are old enough to remember that, John Hines, the late John Hines, was killed in a tragic plane crash. This was back in the early 1990s, 1990, 1991, around, it's a long time ago now. But Harris Wofford was appointed to fill out the term of the late John Hines following his death in that plane crash. Prior to that, Harris Wofford had been one of the top aides to President Kennedy, JFK, back in the 60s. He died following a fall at his home in Washington last weekend. He lived a good long life. He was 92. Harris Wofford. He was in Butler once, quite a few years ago now, and I had a chance to interview him. Very nice man. Very affable gentleman. Don't remember exactly when it was, but I remember the interview as being very pleasant. Are you a basketball fan? I tuned in last night for a few minutes for the Pitt-Duke game on TV. It was a late game. It didn't start till like 9 o'clock. Boy, the Duke Blue Devils. They're the class of National Collegiate Basketball, aren't they? Wow, almost looked like a professional team. The final score wasn't all that bad, if you weren't watching the game. 79-64, but that's because Duke put some of their reserves in at the end of the game. Made Pitt look a little more respectable. Pitt's coming on. They're doing much better than they were, but they're obviously not in a clash yet with Duke, and who is? Just a handful of teams, huh? Yeah. I'm not a real big follower of college basketball until you get to the tournament, the NCAA tournament in March, and that's when I, you know, really start to pay attention because, you know, what do the pollsters know up until that time? You could identify maybe the top 20 teams, but in what order? Who knows? Who knows? And I always like the NCAA tournament. I wish football, college football, would go to a tournament like that because there's always some upsets. You know, a team that you figure never has a chance always pull off a couple of big upsets, sometimes several big upsets. I think that's fun. And it would be great if football did that as well. And it could easily be done. You know, now we've got so many bowl games. What do we have, like 45 bowl games, most of which are absolutely meaningless. There's not that many Division I college football teams. You know, it'd be quite easy to say, okay, anybody wants to be in the tournament, go ahead. It will only take a couple of weeks to narrow it down. Basketball does it. Division II college football does it. The smaller colleges, Slippery Rock, has done very well in the playoffs, the postseason tournament for the past several years. And this past fall, they went all the way to the national quarterfinals. So it can be done without a great deal of problem. Will it change? I don't know. Will the final result of the New Orleans Saints-Los Angeles Rams game change? No. No. It will not change. We'll change in just a moment. We're going to be chatting with Ken Starr of Star Hill Winery, one of the wineries coming to Butler for the WISR Butler County Wine Festival. And that's going to be this Saturday. So take a quick break, and we'll be back with more here in just a moment or so.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Butler Transit now provides weekday transportation to and from Pittsburgh for just $5 one way. No worrying about traffic or expensive parking fees. Free Wi-Fi is also available. Park at a convenient park and ride or hop on the bus at the downtown bus terminal. Senior 65 and up, ride free with a senior pass. For more information, visit butlertransit.com.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. All righty, welcome back. And boy, we welcome a conversation with a gentleman who has become an acquaintance of long standing now. And that's Ken Starr from Star Hill Winery in Kerwinsville, PA. Ken, good to talk with you again.
It's always a pleasure talking to you there, Mr. Malarkey.
The WISR Butler County Wine Festival is coming up this Saturday. Star Hill Vineyard and Winery will be one of those participating, bringing their wares to Butler for you to sample. I think, Ken, you've been to just about every one of our wine festivals all the way back to the beginning, haven't you?
Yeah, way back when. I think we helped Vicki coordinate a little bit, some tips and how to put on a festival. And, yeah, it's been exciting, the growth that's happening there, the fun and activity that transpires there in Butler with the Wine Fest. It's if you haven't gotten your tickets, you better get them soon.
Yeah, it's really grown. I mean, when we first put this on, as you mentioned, we weren't sure what was going to happen. There had never been anything like that here in the Butler area. We're talking 13, 14 years ago. And my goodness, we were surprised by the incredible turnout. In fact, within just a couple of years, we had to expand.
Yep, that's right.
Take on
two rooms.
Yeah, extra rooms down at the Butler Days Inn, because even their biggest rooms couldn't hold everybody. So.
Yeah. It was a great, great turnout and great success in the area.
And then we expanded to two sessions, and we have an afternoon session now from 2 to 5, and then an evening session from 6 to 9, so it really is a big event. Well, let's talk a little bit about Star Hill Vineyard and Winery. First of all, I know where Kerwinsville, PA is. Some of our
roads lead to Kerwinsville, you know.
Well, some of our listeners...
I usually say you can't get there from here, but...
well, you can. You're not far off Interstate 80, right?
Correct. We're if you off I-80, we're exit 120. We have an attraction signs right on I-80, and we're about 8 miles off that exit in Kerwinsville.
Mm-hmm. So that's up.
So you head east.
A little bit past Reynoldsville, but before you get to Dubois, yep. Am I right on that?
Well, so it's, you'd have the Dubois exit. Well, in your case, coming from your end, Clarion, mm-hmm. Dubois, and then you have. There's two Clearfield exits, so we're the second one, exit 120.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit about the history of Star Hill Vineyard and Winery. You've been there for a while.
Well, we most wineries all start, as a hobby first, and that was the case with us. My dad started making wine with his dad in the 50s, and in the late 50s, early 60s, he was stationed in Germany, saw how they made wine over there, And in the 1967, when he came back to the States, where I was born over in Germany, in 1967, him and his brother made wine. We have the original bottles here. Our main business was the financial service business. And in the 90s, we had some offices throughout the United States, one out in Florida. My parents had a house down there. But in the 90s, the grandkids started coming. And my mom said, what the heck are we doing down in Florida? We need to move back up to Pennsylvania. So they bought 13 acres off a client of ours here in Kerwinsville, and we planted 12 vines to see if they would grow, and now we have about 3,000 of them. We're the 23rd largest producer of wine in the state of Pennsylvania. There's almost 300 of us. And we were the first winery in the nation having tasting rooms and winery inside the largest retailer, Walmart. So we're in Altoona, Walmart, Butler, Clearfield, Dubois, and Johnstown.
Yes, we should mention the Butler Walmart, because I'm sure a lot of people have noticed the wine tasting location there. And yeah, that's Star Hill. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So you can taste anything you'd like. Actually, you could, if you like, while maybe the spouse is shopping, you can have a glass of wine while you're waiting and sample all the different wines we have. We have close to 35 wines there. At the Butler location.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was looking over your menu of wines, as you call it. You not only have quite a few selections, Ken, you've got a variety of selections in the different categories of wine, whether it's dry or semi-dry or more sweet wines. Gosh, I didn't count them. Even specialty wines. You got a whole bunch of them.
Well, I think we have a good... wine. We have a lot of wines for every different palate. So we start with the dries. We do the Cabernet Sauvignons, Merlot, Chardonnays, Sauvignon Blanc, a Lambrusco, a Chancellor, which is grown here in Pennsylvania. Our Cabernet comes from California. We do make it all here, though, in Kerwinsville. And then we have the semis, so we do the Malbec. Those come from Chile. We do have Pennsylvania grapes also. We do the Barbera, which is Italian grape. The Vidal, the sweets, which 60 to 70% of the wines sold nationally are sweet wines, sweet to semi-sweet. So if you look at our menu, majority are on that sweet side, or semi-sweets, just because that's, you know, where the market is.
So you get some of your juices from other countries?
Oh yeah, yep. Not a majority, but a few select we get from outside, Chile, Argentina, you know, that neck of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them come from Italy, Washington State, California. Again, you know, also in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, you know, for some of our listeners, is the fifth largest grape producer in the United States and the seventh largest wine producer. So we produce quite a few grapes here in PA.
That might surprise some people, because for a long, long time, when you mention domestic wine, the first place and maybe the only place that people thought about was California.
Yeah, number one producer. And worldwide, when you look at the world market, you know, those countries that buy U.S. wines, they really, for instance, like China, which is one of the biggest importers of wines, they basically only import one of them, and that comes from California.
Huh.
So it's a big, big world market we have here in the United States.
Don't think of China as being importers, more exporters.
Import-export, yep.
You mentioned that your father was stationed in Germany in the service. You, in fact, were born there. Germany, of course, one of those European countries with a long, long tradition of winemaking, and they've got the perfect climate there, you know, along the Rhine River for growing grapes. Countless
beautiful
vineyards along in there.
Have you been over there?
I have, yes.
So have I.
I have not taken...
It's amazing if you go over, for some of the folks that have been to Germany, you know, you wonder why, well, not wonder, but, you know, when our area of Pennsylvania, you know, a lot of, you know, those folks came from the old country. And if you look at the terrain in PA, it's very similar to Germany, although their hills are a little bit more, a little bit taller than ours, but the terrain is very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were over there, it was amazing to even see, and you wondered, you know, they had hundreds or thousands of these grapes growing on the side of the mountains. It looks like they're growing in rock, you know, they've been there forever, and you wonder, how in the world do those grape vines grow on the side of that mountain, you know, with no dirt? Well, there's dirt there, but, you know, it looks like there isn't.
Doesn't look like there's any. I've not taken...
No, yeah, right.
I know a lot of people have taken a boat down the Rhine River. I did not do that, but I took a train. The main train track runs exactly right along the river bit,
which happens
a lot here in our country, too. But, I mean, you look out the windows of the train along those hills that border the Rhine River, and it's just vineyard after vineyard after vineyard, yeah.
Oh yeah, just you know, you come up to a stop sign, and you know, you get the grapevines growing right up over the stop sign. You know, they're just like right up against every piece of earth is grapevine growing. Yeah, it's amazing over there. In fact, we took a boat across the Rhine to the other side when we were over there, and went to the Mosel region and the Katz region, they call it. Just amazing. Some of those wineries have been there for, you know, we always think that things are old over here, you know, in the U.S., but until you go overseas in Germany, you know, 100 years is young, or 200 years, you know, over here, 200 years is like ancient.
Yeah. I've always thought of Riesling as the ultimate German wine. Am I right on that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. The ice wine that they do, which is, you'll find that in Canada, a lot of in the Niagara region up there, they do a lot of ice wines. But yeah, the Riesling, the Tremonet, which is an offspring, sort of, I'd say offspring, but of that Riesling vine, which grows here in Pennsylvania. It's a very hardy grape, grows well in our climate. But the Riesling, yeah, it's a very, very popular wine grape over there in Germany.
Wanted to talk about a couple of your wines that kind of caught my eye as I was glancing down the list. Semi-sweets called, or semi-dry, I guess, the Barbera, with notes of blackberry and cherry. Boy, that's an interesting mix, Ken Starr.
Oh, yeah. You know, when we do the description, sometimes, you know, you have to think, well, let me think, what does that really have, you know, I really taste this notes of whatever that may be, and that Barbera really has a nice flavor to it. It's not a real dry wine, but it's, to a sweet wine drinker, it'll be dry, but to a dry wine drinker, it'll be a semi, you know, but it's, we have it as a semi-dry, but very, very nice. We'll be bringing the Sangiovese with us this Saturday. So we'll be bringing up, I'll run down the list of what we're bringing. So
yes, please do,
A lot of wineries bringing a lot of different wines, but we'll be bringing our Bailey Road Red, which is a blend of Concord Niagara, one of our big sellers. We'll be bringing our Liquid Fun, which is a peach pear blend. That was one of our benefit wines last year for the Area Agency on Aging. We do a benefit wine for them, and through the years donated over $20,000 to their local Area Agency on Aging. We'll be bringing the Sexy Biatches, which is like a Moscato style. Our peach, we call it Just Peachy. A lot of peach flavor. I think we tag it peach cobbler in a bottle. Our pear, which is our big seller, very easy to drink. It's a real nice wine. Our vintage Niagara we're bringing, which is a lot of wineries do a Niagara. This is a vintage, which is, we call it vintage. It's like a late harvest, just a very, very great flavor of like picking the grapes right off the vine. We do our Dubois Double Play, which is a Raspberry Concord. That was also a benefit wine we did for Penn State. Dubois Campus for their athletics to raise money for them. Our Almondo we're bringing back, which is the Amaretto Maraschino Cherry flavor. And our Elderberry. So a lot of our folks that are fans of the Elderberry, we're bringing the Elderberry. It's a great wine that we brought out. And we have a couple of specials we're doing for that day.
So how do you get a wine that has a peach flavor or a pear flavor? Is it just the nature of the grapes that you start with, or do you actually add peaches?
So you have two different types. So you can do 100% of whatever that pear juice or pear peach wine, or you can do a combo type, which is combo is kind of simple to say, combo, which is a blend of a wine that, I don't want to say neutral in flavor, but very, not like a Niagara, is very fruitful flavor, so you wouldn't want to do some kind of a natural flavoring in a Niagara, because it would kind of, you'd still have that Niagara flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Of the grape. So we use a natural flavoring that we use for that particular wine. Peach is really a tough wine to ferment, or grape or fruit to ferment. We've done it in the past, and sometimes after you're done fermenting, and home winemakers can relate to this sometimes, is they'll ferment, and maybe it could be watermelon or something, you know, that they're doing. But after they're all said and done, boy, it just doesn't have that much of a flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike, say, like a Cabernet or Merlot grape would have a lot of flavoring in it, because that's the tendency of what the grape is. You know, it has those notes of, or the, say, Barbera, the notes of blackberry or cherry. There's no blackberry or cherry in that grape, but once it's done fermenting, it has those notes or those kind of flavors or taste of that. So that's what we try to do, and a couple of our specialty wines will add that natural flavoring to that in the wine process, and seems to work. You know, the consumers, the test on that, and if they like the flavor or they like the taste, then it's a winner.
How long does it take to make wine? Do you do it all year long?
Well, we do, because of the amount that we produce. So the process, we have grapes here, so we have a stemmer decrusher or stemmer crusher and a bladder press. So when we pick the grapes, we pick them by hand here. We'll put them in that stemmer decrusher, separates the stems and the leaves from the fruit, and then we'll put in a bladder press. The bladder press then squeezes that. There's water that will inflate the bladder and press it against some screens, which will get all the possible juice out of the grapes. And after that's all done, that's at a particular brick level, which is a fancy name for sugar. We want that around 21 bricks.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll add that yeast to that. The yeast then attacks the sugars that are in the grapes and starts a chemical reaction. So the yeast attack the sugars, makes alcohol, carbon dioxide, and heat. So once the yeast then attacks all the sugar, we have between 10 and 12% alcohol. So that's sort of the cliff notes of the winemaking portion. So we'll do that process. So we'll do either get the grapes in and do the pressing, all one time, or we'll get the juice that's already pressed from the vineyard and then do the winemaking process at that point. So majority of the wineries, especially around your, you know, the wineries that are coming in down there, a majority of them don't grow a grape. They buy the juice,
mm-hmm.
or they buy the grapes from wherever that may be.
And all of this takes place in huge tanks, right?
Yep. We have those all here at the winery. We have tours. Our stainless tanks come from Italy. We have an automated bottling system. When we purchased it about, 13 years ago or something like that, it was the first of its kind in the United States. Not that automation is new. It's been around a long time, but it was designed for, like, wineries our size. And then we use a couple other different, we use ozone to, I don't know if our audience is familiar with the ozone, but we use it in two ways. One, we rinse all our tanks out, and the ozone kind of, it takes the molecular structure of water, which is H2O, to an H3O, and by doing so, we'll eradicate on contact any mold or anything that's living. There's nothing living in the bottles, but if there's, some kind of algae somewhere in the tank that wasn't cleaned right, it'll actually kill all those instantaneously, and then 30 minutes goes right back to water. So we use that system, and we're a handful of us in Pennsylvania use that ozone for that. We can also ozonate the air. And again, like in harvest time, if you go to a lot of the wineries, there's a lot of fruit flies flying around. Virtually there's none here because we can ozonate the air. We do that in the evening or at night when no one's here, and that kills any living organisms or anything that may be, fruit flies and such.
Mm-hmm.
Instantaneously.
Pretty impressive. Well, folks, you'll get a chance to sample several different varieties from Star Hill Vineyard and Winery this Saturday at the WISR Butler County Wine Festival. Ken, we'll look forward to having you here again. It's become a tradition.
It's always a pleasure, and it's always great talking with you and the folks out there in Butler. Come on down, visit our store at the Walmart there in Butler, and if you get a chance and you want to come to another festival, of course, we're putting ours on at February 2nd here in Clearfield, the Groundhog Wine Fest. It's always a fun time here in Clearfield.
Good to talk to you, Ken. Thanks for being with us.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Sure. So long. Ken Starr, he's a really, really nice guy. Met him at the wine festival many, many years ago. Okay. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about overcoming grief and depression. Our guest Carol Hazer will be visiting with us here in just a moment or so. One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today is Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center, just off Newcastle Road, behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. They're in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex there. You can follow the signs, and there you are, Gone Postal Butler, where they will package your items for shipping via U.S. Postal Service or UPS or FedEx, your choice. But they'll package them up. I've utilized their service. It's fast. It's affordable. And what a convenience. They also offer a copying service, scanning, faxing. You can rent a temporary mailbox there. There's even an official notary. They're open Monday through Friday. Go on Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Call for more info, 724-841-0044. This is the time of the year that the Society of St. Vincent de Paul really is able to utilize their client aid program to help families who, you know, come to the end of the month in the dead of winter, maybe you need a little help with a heating bill or a doctor bill or something like that. The client aid program through the Society of St. Vincent de Paul helps out. And, of course, they have their food bank, too, on North Monroe Street in the city of Butler. Both of these programs, the client aid and the food bank, are funded in part through the proceeds from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store. And you can help out there by donating unwanted clothing or shoes or furniture or household items to the thrift store. It's in the Greater Butler Mart, Route 8 South, and they're open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. We stand tallest when we stoop to help others. That's what they say at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. Going to be talking about overcoming grief and depression through faith and positive action on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Cheryl Hazer. She joins us by telephone. She's the author of a book entitled Walking at the Speed of Light. Cheryl, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Well, thank you.
You have an interesting title, Walking at the Speed of Light. That's pretty fast, Cheryl.
Yes, it is, although the book emphasizes the fact that actually it's a slow pace, because what I'm referring to is walking with the light of the world, and therefore walking at Jesus's pace, and of course walking in faith.
Mm-hmm. You have experienced every parent's worst nightmare, Cheryl, the loss of a child. Your son, Josh, died in a car accident, right?
Right. Yeah. And that was 5 years ago. The book begins with his death, and he was flown to a hospital in Great Falls, Montana, where he was declared brain dead. And then we went through the process with organ donation there. And then the book also talks about the time that I spent with grief that spiraled into really deep depression. And then my realization that the only antidote to darkness is light, and that the most reliable light that I had had in my life up to that time was faith. And so that was the beginning of the healing. And, of course, the healing is something that needs to go on through the rest of my life, but nevertheless, healing to the point of being able to live a positive, normal life.
How old was your son, Josh, when he was killed, Cheryl?
He was 33.
Now, you mentioned that this was in Montana. Were you there as well, or were you living apart at that point?
No, he was living in the middle of the state. We actually live in the southeast corner, and so we had a long drive to Great Falls to arrive there just a couple hours before he was declared brain dead.
Let's talk a little bit about organ donation. You have become an advocate of that. You consider it very important, correct?
Yes, definitely. One thing that people need to understand is that it's not just organs. Different parts from Josh actually were able to help over 100 people, and that includes a couple of people who did not have to have amputations because his young, healthy veins were transplanted into their bodies. And so, and a lady that wrote to us because she has no more back pain after many years of that due to his vertebrae being used in her back. And so it's many things like that. And also the heart and liver and lungs are size specific. Josh was a very large man. He was 6'8", and large men wait a long time for transplants. We are in correspondence with the fellow that has Josh's lungs, who was close to death and now is living a very healthy, productive life. And we were at a conference, we were actually able to meet the fellow that has Josh's heart and to listen to that heart through a stethoscope. Wow. That was an amazing moment.
Your book, Walking at the Speed of Light, is divided into several different parts. Chapter 3 talks about grief and resurrection. So that's part of the journey, huh? Grief toward resurrection.
Oh, very definitely. Very definitely. And I think that one thing people need to realize is that when we love anyone, we sign on for both the joy and the sorrow. And we may need to deal with the sorrow, but we also can see at the end of it that there will be joy, that there is resurrection, and that there also will be healing and understanding for us.
The subtitle of your book, Reflections for Following Jesus in Grief and Joy, obviously very important to you. Your Christian faith has enabled you to move on as best you can after the tragic death of your son, Cheryl?
Yes, very definitely. One thing that faith does is that it really fits with forward thinking, living in today, but also being able to think forward. And it also either instills in us or nurtures in us resilience. And that's something that I emphasize a lot in the book. One of the things that I say is that resilience is not just bouncing back or carrying on. It is an inner resource which can keep us from the deepest recesses of that black hole, which can give us the ability not only to survive death, disaster, and depression, but also to emerge on the other side stronger in character and in understanding. Resilience enables us to understand that when God's will is done, blessings will come from all experiences. And I think that's very important for people, and it doesn't matter what their faith is, that's this resilience is one aspect of it that will definitely help.
You seem to, as I look at the various chapters in your book, one is called Learning to Walk at Jesus' Pace, and you seem to follow the life of Christ through your book. Is that right, Cheryl?
Yes, through part of it, anyhow. There are a lot of the chapters that are just dealing with different aspects of light and then applying them to life. But yes, very definitely, his life and the life of people around him were very is definitely a part of the book. An example being times when we get out of step and therefore are not walking well with him. And I use Peter's life as an example of that.
Talk a little bit about depression, not necessarily with something horrendously tragic as you have gone through, but, you know, we can have grief, we can have depression, we can have anger, we can have a deep sadness at other points in our lives, and some of the suggestions in your book can help out there too, right?
Very definitely. I think that all of those have this element of darkness, and they need some light. They need to, you know, answers that help through a book like this. And I have to say that the purpose of the book, it was made so clear to me. I have a good friend who was a kingpin in AA in our part of the state, and he made the comment that when we use parts of our journey to help others, then God's grace flows not only into their lives, but back into our lives as well. And that was the point where I really understood the purpose of the book.
Your chapters are very short, succinct. You can read a chapter really in a couple of minutes. One of them struck me. It's chapter 31, Sunrises and Sunsets. And you make that analogous to birth and death, right?
Yes, definitely. And those things where we can see the beauty in both of those things and actually realize that they are, both of them, very strongly a part of life.
A little bit about our guest listeners. Cheryl Hazer is a composer, a public speaker, a writer, a wife, and a mother. She taught high school English, Spanish, and journalism. And she directed a K through 12 school library before serving as director of a library in Montana. And you're obviously still very active in your church, right, Cheryl?
Yes, I definitely am. And of course, that's a part of it, too. One chapter of the book deals with stained glass windows and how the people depicted on stained glass windows are ones whom the light shines through. And I use that as analogous to the people in our lives where the light shines through them. And very often we can find those through church, or we can find them through supportive groups like Compassionate Friends and so on. And those people are very, very important. One experience that I had not long after Josh died, I was home alone. My husband was back at the ranch camp where he works, and sun had set early, and it was dark, and I was dark. There was no doubt about it, a very tough evening. There was a knock on the door. A couple of people from the community where we used to live, it was fairly close by, and they had with them a big old pot of homemade turkey noodle soup and a loaf of homemade bread, asked if they could come in and join me for supper. And that time, we talked about Josh, but we talked about many other things, and I still can feel the warmth and the healing that went with just having these wonderful people whom, as I say, an example of the people whom the light shines through, having them offer something as nurturing, comforting as soup and bread, and also just being with me.
In your book, you share a great many very personal reflections, very personal memories. Was writing the book therapeutic in a way for you, Cheryl?
Yes, it was, and I have to say that it actually started out kind of on the dark side. I had gone to pay for my son's tombstone, and when I was teaching high school, I used to always emphasize to the kids, it isn't carved in stone. In other words, it can get better. You can do something. Things can change here. And I walked out the door of that mortuary realizing that this time it actually was carved in stone. And I came home and I wrote a poem about that just kind of spilled out a great deal of the grief. And that was kind of a beginning. From that point on, it became a little more, you know, if I write all this down, why, maybe there will be a way that it will help someone else.
Did you have a specific target audience when you were writing this book, Cheryl Hazer? Who were you writing this for?
I think it applies to, all adults and also definitely teens. I've had a number of teens that have read the book, because I don't know of anybody that doesn't have at least some element of darkness in their life, some grief, all of us experience grief, anger or depression or whatever it happens to be. Everyone deals with that, and so there's something that they can get from the book. So I would say that my target audience is very, very broad.
The title of the book, once again, listeners, Walking at the Speed of Light, Reflections for Following Jesus in Grief and Joy, by Cheryl Hazer, who's been our guest here on the It's Your Turn program for the past few minutes. Nice to talk with you, Cheryl. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, Thank you. I wanted people to be aware that the book is available through bookstores and online bookstores. And I also have a website where they can order the book, CherylJHazer.com. It's CherylJHazer.com.
Yes. What's the spelling of that last name if you're looking for that online? It's pronounced Hazer,
right,
but it's spelled H-E-S-E-R. Nice to talk with you, Cheryl. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you.
If you're thinking about buying a car, truck, or SUV, or even if you just bought one, make sure you check out the great rates at Armco Credit Union. Through February 28th, you can get a 60-month loan on new and used vehicles for as low as 2.24 annual percentage rate. We'll even refinance your loan from another financial institution. It's never been easier to join, so call today for other rates and terms or visit us at armcocu.com to become a member. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and federally insured by NCUA.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Coming up, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISI, we're going to be chatting by telephone with our guest. His name is Don Rehm, former White House correspondent and congressional science advisor. And we're going to be talking about how we can improve workplace performance from a brain-based perspective. Don Rehm, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you.
How to improve workplace performance from a brain-based perspective. Boy, that sounds pretty scientific there, Don. Are we going to be able to understand this?
Yeah, absolutely we will. It feels a lot like common sense is what my CEOs for our client companies tell us, but the challenge has been that common sense isn't common practice. So what we've done here is that, you know, there are more than 1,000 books in print today on leadership. And yet the percentage of employees who are actually engaged when they go to work hasn't changed over the last two decades. So what that tells us is that the current approach to leadership just isn't moving the needle very much. It just isn't creating a more compelling workplace for employees. So what I've done is just gone into the research on brain science, neuroscience, and we learned more about the brain in the last 8 years than we have in the previous 1,000. And one of the things that we now know are the conditions where people operate, where they literally thrive at their best. And all I do in the book is talk about how to create those conditions in the workplace.
The title of Don's book, where he talks about this, is Thrive by Design, the neuroscience that drives high-performance cultures. By the way, what do we mean when we say neuroscience? What do you mean by that, Don?
Well, it's just the study of the brain, and some of the early research was on where things are happening in the brain, and that was really exciting. But now we have a much better sense of why we do what we do as human beings, and understanding the why of human behavior is absolutely critical to understand in the workplace.
Which are the happiest workplaces, and why is that?
The happiest workplaces are work environments where people are valued, seen, recognized, they get constructive feedback on what they're doing, and where they have relationships that feel healthy to them. It turns out one of the things that we've come to understand over the last decade is that Homo sapiens, people, us, we're herd animals. That is, we're hardwired at birth to be in groups and to perform best in groups. And so the flip side of that is we never operate at our best when we're isolated, when we're alone. So the nice thing about work is it's natural for the brain because we're with other people. But what many workplaces have to get figured out is how to make those conditions actually feel safe to the people that are in them.
Don Rehm, listeners, our guest is the founder and CEO of E3 Solutions, which is a provider of employee workplace metrics. Gosh, Don, when I first heard about metrics, it was, you know, like baseball managers trying to figure out how to pitch a guy, you know, on a day game on a Tuesday when he was 0-2. Now we're talking about metrics in their everyday workplace, too?
Absolutely. We have, at my company, we have a 28-question online survey that we give to every employee in the company. And based on those metrics, on that data, we can discover how engaged employees are at work, and we do it by manager. And it turns out there's a huge variance in how employees perform at work based on who they actually report to.
You served as a White House correspondent for a news organization, Don?
I did. I was a White House correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, which is a daily newspaper. Then I was a bureau chief for a television news bureau in Washington. And one of the things I learned is the importance of facts and using facts to make better decisions. And that's something that just hasn't been done in the leadership field. And that's what we're trying to bring to it.
So we talked about happiest workplaces. What if you have a toxic work culture? Can we do something to turn that around?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I talk about in the book. For example, chapter 6 in the book is on accountability. But what I show leaders is how to hold employees accountable without being so toxic, without being so negative. And it turns out the results are just remarkable when that's done. We also have a chapter on positive leadership, on recognition and feedback. It's a very practical approach to creating a workplace where employees look forward to coming to work. And Dave, this is really important. In fact, it's never been more important because we're at the lowest unemployment rate since the Vietnam War. We're running out of people. At the same time, the economy has been growing for 99 straight months. The increase in job growth has been for about 98 months, and there isn't a lot of talent left out there. And what that means for employers, for leaders, for company leaders, is they need to create the conditions, really for the first time in our lifetime. Managers have to create the conditions where employees will look forward to coming to work, because if they don't, those employees are more likely than ever to look somewhere else.
Are there generational factors that come into play here, Don Rehm? Do younger potential employees have different desires and needs than older folks?
Oh, absolutely they do. There are some things that are very common to our behavior. Not only do we share 99.9% of our DNA with each other, but we share common drivers of behavior. But there's no question that, for example, millennials, anyone that's 34 years or younger, and certainly what's now being called Gen Z, anyone who's 22 years of age or younger, they are looking to work differently than we did and certainly our parents did. They're not looking at work just for a paycheck. They're looking at work for a place to extend their social network. The research also says they're trying to find meaning and purpose in their life through what they do when they come to work. And they're much more likely to quit and move on. The last statistics I looked at from the U.S. Department of Labor, the average tenure of a millennial was just 2.5 years. So it's getting harder and harder to get these loyal employees that companies, that leaders really want and need.
And not only getting them, but keeping them, I guess, right? That's important.
Yes, it is. And we tell our clients that more than a hiring strategy, what companies need today is a retention strategy. You need to hold on to the good people you have, because if you lose them, there's just very few people to take their place, and they're probably not going to be of the same quality and skill set. So employers should really be looking at, how do I hold on to my employees so they don't move on when they discover how deep the labor market is, that is, how many jobs there are that are available.
Generation Z, you mentioned. Boy, we had the greatest generation, baby boomers, Generation X, millennials, Generation Z. We're going to have to come up with some new nomenclature here before long. We're running out of letters, Don.
Yeah, I don't know where they're going to go next. I'll have to wait and see what the demographers do. But, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity to spend some time with your listeners. If they'd like a little recap of this, they can go to the YouTube channel, just youtube.com, and search for Don Rehm TED Talk. That's Don, R-H-E-E-M, TED, T-E-D Talk. And they'll see a nice little 14-minute encapsulation of this. And, of course, they can also go to Amazon or Books A Million and pick up the book.
Thrive for Design, the neuroscience that drives high-performance cultures. Don Rehm, thanks for chatting with us. Interesting stuff here. Nice to meet you.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So long now.
Bye-bye.
You love Chef George's Pork Chop Dinners, and he wants to say thank you with a friends and family dinner tonight at Tanglewood. Choose between homemade ham loaf or stuffed chicken breast with two sides, dessert, and a beverage. Dinner starts at 3, runs until 6. As always, it's BYOB.
Yeah, that's coming up tonight. Tonight, well, this afternoon through this evening, 3 to 6. By the way, $10 for adults, $9 for members. Delicious ham loaf dinner by Chef George. Tanglewood Center, later today, 3 to 6 p.m. $10 for adults, $9 for members. I'm Dave Malarkey. That wraps up our Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. Hope to see you tomorrow. Starting at 12:30, we'll be chatting with Carol Landis about the Chili Cook-Off and the Spay Neuter Foundation. And Rachel Pizzaglia will also be with us from the YMCA tomorrow, the Ulster County Family YMCA. Hope to see you then.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.